You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rocky Bellville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Bellville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, February 12th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad you could make it here to our little corner of the internet, live and direct from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. And today I really mean it. My God, it is beautiful in Potland, Oregon today. My wife calls this the February tease. Usually sometime in the middle of February, we get a week or two of really nice temperatures, and then it goes back to being 40 and windy and rainy and cold for about the next 6 weeks. Maybe it's a Punxsutawney Phil thing. I don't know. Do we have a Punxsutawney Phil in Oregon? I suppose he'd have to be a beaver instead of a groundhog, wouldn't he? I'm not exactly sure how that works out, but it really doesn't matter because it's a gorgeous day and it's a fine day to be a marijuana legalizer in this country. We've got all sorts of news and information to bring to you today and a very special interview coming up at 1:30 in our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. You know, we've been talking to the people from law enforcement against prohibition for a long time, and it's usually former prosecutors and former prison guards and former cops that we're talking to, but today we get a special guest, a current cop. That's right, a current Connecticut police officer named Sean Perez is a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We're going to talk to him about his advocacy for ending drug prohibition, not just marijuana prohibition, but drug prohibition, and how that sits with the rest of the officers on his police force. It should be an interesting conversation. Also coming up on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant, and in the rant today, who is more likely to muck up 2016 legalization? Is it going to be California or Ohio? Both states are facing some similar roadblocks in getting legalization on the ballot, but there's also a lot of differences between the two states as well. We'll take a deeper look at that in the Radical Rant at the end of the show today. Also on today's show, some more drug war data mining on that National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study showing that marijuana consumers are no more likely to get into crashes than our sober drivers. And this time we're going to follow up on how the media has been portraying this study. Seems there's a couple of mainstream publications that just don't understand what the data are showing us. Also on the show today, we've got a behind the headlines segment. We're going to take a look back up in Washington State with the Kettle Falls Five. Those are the five medical marijuana patients, the family, who are being prosecuted in federal court, even though they were following the state medical marijuana law. Turns out the prosecutors are afraid that despite having them dead to rights guilty, they might not get a conviction in this case, and they're pretty upset about it. We'll tell you all about that behind the headlines, and that comes up right after the 420 radio news. And in the news today, Colorado lawmakers are trying to decide if medical marijuana should be tested as rigorously as recreational marijuana. Yeah, you heard that right. The legal status of medical marijuana dispensaries and edible products in Michigan is up for debate. There's a couple of bills addressing that. We'll tell you all about it. Oklahoma may become the next state to be a CBD-only state for the treatment of epilepsy in children. The Suquamish tribe in Washington State is working with legislators in Washington State to fulfill the legalization of marijuana on tribal lands, and we'll talk a little bit about the former University of Nevada, Reno College president who has taken a dip in the world of marijuana legalization and entrepreneurship. All that's coming up on the Russ Bellville Show in Hour 1, and then stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111 and continue with more of the stories of the day. Thanks for joining us. We're back with the news right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Bellville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay, read the Weed Blog today. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belleville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, February 12, 2015. Colorado lawmakers are considering mandatory testing requirements for medical marijuana, something patients have wanted for years, but there are some concerns from the pot industry. Currently, recreational pot is only required to be tested for potency and homogeneity at one of 15 state-certified testing facilities. The Marijuana Enforcement Division said it expects to roll out testing for mold, pesticides, and other contaminants this year. Representative Jonathan Singer is among a handful of state lawmakers now working to create similar requirements for medical pot. Lawmakers are looking at the state's medical marijuana market as a whole because the original regulations were passed with a 5-year sunset provision in 2010. The rules currently in place will expire if legislators don't act this year. Michael Elliott, the executive director of the Marijuana Industry Group, said there are concerns about the increased costs for patients and inconsistencies with results from multiple labs. The legal status of medical marijuana dispensaries and edible products in Michigan could be clarified under reintroduced legislation that stalled out last year in the Michigan legislature. The proposals would help local communities, patients, and caregivers, according to State Representative Mike Calton. Calton, in a Thursday morning press conference, announced a new bill that would provide a regulatory framework for provisioning centers, which could sell extra medical marijuana grown by caregivers after the product was tested for quality and contaminants. Local governments could choose to ban provisioning centers or limit the number of storefronts that can operate under Calton's proposal. Separate legislation sponsored by Representative Lisa Lyons would allow certified medical marijuana patients to use non-smokable forms of the drug, including liquids, edibles, and topical creams. Michigan's 2008 medical marijuana law does not directly address dispensaries or edible products, and a series of court cases have clouded the legal status of both. Oklahoma is one step closer to legalizing cannabis oil derived from marijuana. State lawmakers passed a bill Wednesday that would allow children with epilepsy to use cannabis oil that contains less than 0.3% THC, the chemical in marijuana that gets you high. The Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics supports the idea. Mark Woodward with the Bureau said, quote, "This is not the legalization of medical marijuana. It's simply taking the particular chemicals in it and putting it in a medical form," end quote. He also continued, quote, "It's all about helping children. There's no downside," end quote. Representative John Eccles, the bill's author, said, The bill would be called Katie's Law. Katie is Representative Echols' niece who suffers from seizures. The bill will now go to the Senate. If the Senate agrees, it will go to Governor Mary Fallon. If she signs the bill, Katie's Law will take effect immediately. Governor Fallon says she supports the bill. The Suquamish tribe has thrown its support behind legislation that would allow the state of Washington and tribes to work closely together on marijuana regulation. A Suquamish representative testified Tuesday in Olympia in favor of a bill authorizing the governor to craft agreements with tribes addressing how legalization, regulation, and sales of marijuana on reservations would work in conjunction with state law. The proposed legislation was introduced in the legislature as House Bill 2000 and Senate Bill 5848. Both were referred to committees. The House Commerce and Gaming Committee held a public hearing for HB 2000 on Tuesday. The bills were proposed after the U.S. Department of Justice issued a memo effectively clearing the way for tribes to legalize marijuana, provided they regulate the drug in concert with federal law enforcement priorities. The justice memo was issued partially in response to inquiries by the Suquamish tribe. Former University of Nevada, Reno President Joe Crowley has found a new line of work, selling marijuana. The well-liked former university boss is president of Sierra Wellness Connection, one of two companies that were awarded Reno's first business licenses for cultivating medical marijuana. The second business is MMG Agriculture, headed by Reno's Job Hall, a former real estate executive. The Reno City Council voted unanimously to approve privileged business licenses for the two companies, which must obtain final state approval before opening. Sierra Wellness Connection will also be operating a dispensary in the city of Reno, Crowley said. Crowley said he became interested in medical marijuana as his older brother was dying of multiple sclerosis. His older sister, who underwent 13 major surgeries, also used medical marijuana as a pain reliever, he said. Crowley said he and his business partners are not part of a push to legalize marijuana for recreational use. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, February 12th, 2015. I'm Russ Belvel. Radio is 24-hour marijuana.
With over a billion people in the world, chances are there's somebody out there just like you. There are software engineers, pastry chefs, artists, and people with medical conditions. And what do many of these people have in common? They use marijuana. It's expected that marijuana will be legalized in California. And when that happens, what will be the biggest concern? Safety. That's where we come in. Hi-Def Transit is a discreet shuttle service that also serves as a mobile vapor room. Members can medicate on board while our certified drivers get you to your destination safely so you can enjoy the ride. So hop in, make friends, and ride safe. Hi-Def Transit.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, internationalcbc.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 and a half after the hour. And today in Behind the Headlines, we're going to take another look at the Kettle Falls 5 case. We've told you about this case before. A family of five, actually four family members and a family friend who were growing 74 marijuana plants. They were busted and taken to federal court where their lawful use of medical marijuana Although technically speaking, it's not lawful in Washington state. They merely have an affirmative defense. But still, they were well within the guidelines for medical marijuana in the state of Washington, a state which, of course, has just passed recreational marijuana legalization. But that doesn't matter because the federal prosecutors, the U.S. attorneys there in the Eastern District of Washington have decided to go forward in prosecuting this case, a case that could bring 10-year mandatory minimums for everyone involved on every count they're involved, effectively meaning a life sentence for the 74-year-old patriarch of the family who has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. But according to a post in the Inlander.com, the prosecutors in the Kettle Falls 5 case are worried that despite all their best efforts to try to lock up a family of medical marijuana users, those users may go free. The prosecution is worried that the jury is going to exercise jury nullification and vote to acquit the defendants in order to send a social message. This has concerned the prosecution so much they filed a motion on February 10th, just a couple of days ago. They filed a motion that said, quote, "The United States believes this indicates the defendants are attempting to engage in jury nullification." This that they're referring to is an article on Forbes.com by our friend Jacob Sullum that quotes one of the defense attorneys from the family. And even though medical marijuana can't be mentioned in federal court, everybody will get busted. There'll be a mistrial if anybody mentions the word medical or marijuana or the fact that these people were sick or even how much federal time they face if they're convicted. None of that can be mentioned at trial. And that's what's got the prosecutors concerned, is they feel that the defense is trying to get this information through to the jury in sneaky ways. Again, reading from their motion, circumventing the court's previous order and attempting to provide the jury with evidence by planting the seed and hoping it will germinate in the jury deliberation room into a discussion of issues which the court has already ruled are not relevant to this case and should be not considered by the jury. The law in this area is straightforward. It is improper for a defendant to suggest in any way that the jury should acquit the defendant, even if it finds the United States has met its burden of proof. Of course, the burden of proof that they're talking about in this case is whether or not those folks broke federal law. And on that, it's a slam dunk, folks. They were caught with marijuana plants. Even one marijuana plant is a felony under federal law. And so these prosecutors think they got an easy case in front of them, but what they didn't count on is that the rest of the community and the mainstream media and the world at large would focus on this case as an extreme abuse of prosecutorial discretion. Already, the U.S. attorneys and prosecutors at the federal level have been told through the Cole memo and subsequent follow-ups that they are not to use their limited time and resources going after the patients who are lawfully using medical marijuana in the states that have authorized it. Furthermore, we had action by the U.S. Congress that was then signed into law that forbade the Department of Justice from spending any money from going after state legal medical marijuana providers or consumers. But of course, this case started before that became law. I suppose the prosecutors would argue that it was already in the pipeline and does not apply to spending any new money. But as far as I'm concerned, this is going completely against the intent of the government, the intent of the Department of Justice at the federal level. And this leads us to believe that these are rogue prosecutors, completely ignoring all the guidelines from the federal level and moving forward with a case that serves no benefit to the public, to the general welfare, to the safety of the people in the state of Washington. Indeed, we have people that are growing thousands of marijuana plants in the state of Washington, not just for medical purposes, but for recreational consumption, and these prosecutors don't seem that eager to go after them. Why pick on a family of five, most of them in their 50s, 60s, one guy even in his 70s, a guy dying of pancreatic cancer, a family that had been following the law to the letter, to the best of their ability? Why go after them? What kind of message do you send here? It's not as if you're going to overturn medical marijuana or get people to reverse their feelings about it. All you're doing here is hastening the end of federal prohibition. And I believe we are going to get a jury nullification out of this case. The case has gotten too big. That name, Kettle Falls 5, is easily found on social media and throughout Google and Facebook. Let's send a message. Let's judge this law as improper.
Come and see the violence inherent in the system. Help, help, I'm being repressed.
Absolutely, we're being repressed. This case makes no sense. I mean, even from the point of view of a prosecutor, why would you want to get all of this bad ink for yourself in a state that's already legalized recreational marijuana? It's such a 20th century move that I can't quite understand, even with the devil's advocate hat on, why they'd want to do this.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420radio to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby!
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky Roller Rage, Roller Rage, Roller Rage.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on RadicalRuss.com.
Get.buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 23 after the hour, and today we're taking another look at that study that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has recently put out that shows that marijuana-using drivers are no greater crash risk than sober drivers. And this one is a bombshell, especially to puncture the talking points of the prohibitionists out there that fear the stoned mayhem on the freeways if we were to legalize marijuana. Last year, there was a congressional hearing on this issue, and the representative from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, his name's Jeff Michael. He's an associate administrator for research and program development. He was asked about how many crash fatalities does marijuana cause each year? You know, this is the big fear. We're going to legalize. There's going to be wrecks on the freeways. Well, it's not as if legalization invents marijuana. If marijuana were going to cause people to wreck, we should have seen it by now. So asking this researcher from National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, how many wrecks are there? Seems like a pretty straightforward question. The response from the Associate Administrator for Research and Program Development was, quote, "That's difficult to say. We don't have a precise estimate." That's it. We're supposed to be so afraid of this stone driving menace, and yet we don't have a precise estimate of how much stone driving there is. The best we could get out of the guy was to say it's probably not zero. It's a non-zero number. Now, this study that was released last Friday was the first large-scale crash risk study in the United States to include drugs other than alcohol, and National Highway Traffic Safety Administration found that after you adjusted for confounding variables, cannabis consumption was not associated with an increased probability of accident. Now, there was a 25% greater risk of crash for people that had marijuana in their systems. This is active THC in the blood. But that 25% risk dropped down to 5% greater risk when they accounted for age and gender. See, the thing is people who consume marijuana most often tend to be young males. And young males tend to crash their cars more. So once you accounted for all that, a young male pot-smoking driver was no worse than a young male non-pot-smoking driver, and so forth. And then once you figured in alcohol to the equation, if any of those pot-smoking drivers also had alcohol in their system, that extra 5% disappeared as well, and there was virtually statistically no difference at all between a marijuana-only driver and a sober driver. This was over 3,000 drivers they tested in Virginia and another 6,000 controls they tested to make sure they had all the variables accounted for. In fact, there's a great graphic that they've posted, and I've got this on my Pinterest account if you want to check this out. But adjusted odds ratios between drug use and crash risk, adjusted for demographic variables and alcohol use. That is, when we account for whether or not they're drinking, how old they are, what gender they are, here are the risks. Marijuana, no extra risk. All legal drugs, 2% greater risk. All illegal drugs, 1% lower risk. Huh? Lower risk of crash on all illegal drugs? Well, part of that might be explained by the fact of stimulants were an 8% lower risk. So yeah, maybe being alert, you know, being on speed in some sort is going to have a lower crash risk than a sober driver who might get tired and fall asleep at the wheel. There were greater risks, 17% and 19% respectively, for narcotic analgesics and sedatives. So painkillers and sedatives were much more likely to be a crash risk than whether or not someone had used THC. And of course, when it comes to alcohol, that's the big one. That's the one we all know is the big crash risk. And of course, the data once again bear that out. Someone at 0.08 blood alcohol level is double the crash risk. Someone at 0.10 is 6 times the crash risk. And someone at 0.15, 12 times the crash risk. Marijuana users, even. But that doesn't mean that the reporters out there covering this story actually understand what it is they are covering. In the USA Today, Chris Woodyard summarized the story this way. He said, quote, "The study showed that marijuana users are more likely to be involved in crashes, but it also points out that marijuana is smoked mostly by young men, the group with the highest propensity for accidents anyway." Right, but that's misleading to say that they're more likely to be involved in crashes because we're not. The second sentence erases the first sentence. This more likely to be involved in crashes was erased by the fact that once you controlled for the demographics, it was even. Similarly, the headline in the story said, "Study finds new driving threat from dopers, druggies." No, it didn't. No new driving threat. No increased crash risk from people using marijuana. And in the Washington Post, they said, "There are fewer drunk drivers on the road, but their place has been taken by people high on marijuana and prescription drugs." But no, that's not exactly what it said either. The main point to be taken away from this, marijuana use does not increase crash risk, period.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use.
If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and today in Cops Say Legalize Drugs, we've got a very special guest joining us, Sean Perez from the great state of Connecticut. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And Sean, let me see if I've got this correct. Is it true that you are a current Connecticut police officer?
Yep.
Wow. Active. We're having a little trouble hearing you there, Sean. Do you have any way of turning your side up a bit?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to set up my phone. I just forgot the case. I know some people say they can't hear me.
I got you better now. That sounds great. So, where are you serving right now? Is this state police, local police?
It's local municipal police.
No, municipal police. Okay, and, you know, this is rare for me. You know, usually when I do this interview every couple of weeks with members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, but I think you may be the first active police officer I've spoken to. Does this bring you any cause for concern? Do you worry about your career being so vocal an advocate for ending Prohibition?
No, you know, I see where the country's headed. You know, a lot of people want change, and you know, I feel like I'm going to be the first of many. You know, I don't see myself getting held back or any issues.
So there's been no response from your supervisors or fellow officers negatively about this, or have they supported you?
You know what? A lot have supported me. You know, most people are just kind of neutral. You know, they just don't really want to know either way or the other. You know, it's just it's a job to them, and they're going to do their job.
I see. So, Sean, what led you to becoming a police officer? What's your background?
My father was a police officer. Before this, I was a florist, you know. But I always wanted to be a police officer, so I went for it and I got it.
Oh, well, fantastic. Now, coming from a family of police officers, had this ever been, you know, something you guys discussed around the dinner table? Did Dad ever say, you know, this, you know, pot being illegal, this is stupid? Or, I mean, was that ever a concern?
You know what? We used to talk about it in the past. I mean, we still talk about it to this day. He's one of my biggest supporters. You know, he's the first person I talk to about everything, just to get his opinion on stuff.
Well, what was some of the things he would tell you about Prohibition that led you to this stand?
You know, how it doesn't work, how it hasn't worked, and all the time that it's been in effect, you know, and that he's glad to see change coming, you know, because it's on its way. It'll be here.
Absolutely. Connecticut right up there in the Northeast, one of the many states that have a medical marijuana provision, also recently passed decriminalization. What's the reaction been from police up there with decriminalization? Have they generally supported that?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, it eases up the burden of work, you know, not having to track down minimal offenders, such as, you know, people with small amounts of marijuana. You know, it doesn't tie us up having to bring them back to the station and, you know, at the end of the day, you take one drug dealer off the street, another person's just going to take a spot. You know, so we need to look at alternative means of getting rid of the issue. And if we could fully legalize, then we could, you know, more benefit off of the sales and the taxes associated with that. You know, just like Colorado's doing.
Absolutely. All right. So what do you think the timetable is for something like that in Connecticut? I mean, is 2016 too soon for us to be thinking about legalizing Connecticut?
No, it's not soon enough. But I guess they're holding a special session in New York, United Nations. So 2016 sounds about right. I was here in a year ago, so, you know, it doesn't sound too far off. But, yeah, I can't really comment on when exactly.
Yeah,
but if I had to guess, maybe 2016. You know, maybe we'll go the way of Colorado.
Well, that'd be great. We're speaking with Sean Perez. He's a municipal police officer in the state of Connecticut. And Sean, in your duties as a police officer, have you had to enforce marijuana laws? Have you ever had to bust someone for weed?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and to this day, I still do. You know, it is still decriminalization doesn't mean that you're not going to get in trouble for it. You know, you get a ticket for it at this point. You know, I still got to give out that ticket if I find marijuana. I mean, there's still things to enforce, still things that affect.
Well, you know, there's sometimes opponents will say with decriminalization, all you're doing is freeing up the consumers of the illegal drug dealers. Has there been any increase? Do you feel people are more lax with their marijuana use and their dealing and selling? Has it increased or decreased any?
No, the fear of marijuana use is still there. People are still, you know, still think they're going to go to jail, and people are still afraid that, you know, it's not like people are out in the streets smoking weed. It's nothing like that. People, you know, it's still a very secret, you know, black market thing.
And as that black market continues to flourish in Connecticut, I imagine like every other state, you've got, you know, big cities with some people who are hardly affected at all by this prohibition and other communities that are greatly affected by this prohibition. Can you speak any to some of the racial divide that's going on in the enforcement of marijuana laws in Connecticut?
You know, I really haven't done too much research into the racial divide, but as far as what I've been able to, you know, look into, Connecticut is actually, as far as racial disparity for arrests, you know, we have like one of the lowest disparity rates compared to other states. You know, so I think Connecticut's pretty progressive in that respect.
That's great to hear. I mean, some places like Minnesota were like 8-1. Washington, D.C. was like 9-1. So Connecticut must be pretty low there on that.
Connecticut is pretty diverse. I mean, there's a large black, large Hispanic community. So it's different. You know, other states like Minnesota, they probably have a very big discrepancy as far as, you know, who's you know, blacks, Hispanics, and whites. So it's much easier to target them, you know, because, you know, it's like picking a speck of pepper out of a salt shaker.
Okay, good point. We're speaking with Sean Perez from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and want to remind everyone that LEAP has hundreds of speakers, all former members of law enforcement, prosecutors, prison guards, cops, all sorts of folks. You can find them at leap.cc. They've probably got a speaker in your neck of the woods or in one of 120 countries now, I understand. Check them out at leap.cc. All right, Sean, so as we move forward in Connecticut with legalization, you know, hopefully moving forward in 2016. Every other state that's tried this, we've seen a sheriff's association, a chiefs of police association, usually cops coming out against these things, you know, even though they say they don't make the laws, they just enforce them. Do you anticipate that any of the police organizations, law enforcement organizations in Connecticut would at least stay out of the way if you try to legalize?
You know, I can see them staying out of the way. You know, the attitudes towards marijuana in Connecticut are a lot different from the attitudes in the rural South. You know, they're very, 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 I don't want to say tough. We're not tough, because we are tough. I mean, we take down big distributors and big growing operations. But, you know, the small-time users aren't really who we target. You know, if it's something that's going to be out of control and going to affect the children of our community, then, you know, we'll definitely intervene. But, you know, the small-time people who are just, you know, not causing any effect, You know, that's not who we go after. So I can see Connecticut not having any issues moving forward with legalization.
Excellent to hear.
And I can see officers trying to stay out of the way.
That would be great. I mean, it would be a lot to ask to think that they would support it, even though really they should. But if at least they stay out of the way, that would be helpful. Now, Sean, I was also wondering, with respect to the work you're doing in Connecticut and your work as a law enforcement officer, you guys have been watching what's been going down in Colorado and in Washington State. As Connecticut moves forward, do you see anything that's happening there that you don't want to see happen under Connecticut legalization?
I would like the transition to be easy, because the more pushback there is against it, the more we lose out. I would like Connecticut to maximize the benefit of marijuana legalization.
Yeah, absolutely. In these proposals to legalize marijuana, oftentimes there is these formulas on how they're going to divvy up the tax money. And in Oregon, we kind of did a progressive thing here and cited that we would give 35% of the tax money to law enforcement. Is that something you'd want to see in a new legalization proposal for Connecticut?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hold on one second. Absolutely. I think that all the money that is collected in that respect should be, allocated properly. But 35% is a good amount for law enforcement.
All right. And we got a couple of minutes here. And before I let you go, if someone out there is listening that, has their typical fears, they worry about their kids if it's legal. They worry about stoned drivers, behind the wheel if it's legal. What would you say to those parents or those folks that just don't think legalization ought to happen?
To those parents, I say, would you rather have your children, first off, your children have easy, unprecedented access to marijuana or any other drug they want? It's easier for them to get marijuana than it would be for them to get alcohol. I could talk to, and I have a lot of young cousins, and I could say at this point right now, go get me a bag of weed, go get me a bag of alcohol. And I'm going to tell you, go get me a bottle of alcohol. And I'm going to tell you that the ones that I tell to go get me a bag of weed are going to come back way quicker than the ones I tell to get me a bottle of alcohol. So, it's much safer if you allow the states, and the government to regulate instead of prohibit. Then at that point, they won't.
And how about the effect of marijuana on driving? Is that something that worries you as a law enforcement officer?
What we need to do is find a way to easily test people who have recently smoked instead of people who, smoked two, three days ago. Right now, we don't have a method testing, immediate use. So that's definitely some technology we need to look into.
Yeah, there's Oregon State is going to be looking at that. That was part of our legalization proposal, was to fund some scientific studies on that. And as you correctly note, everything we have now just tells you that you have smoked pot, but not recently, or that you're impaired. So we appreciate your honesty on that issue. Sean Perez is a police officer in Connecticut and a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Sean, thanks so much for speaking out as an active duty officer. We need many more of you.
Thank you so much.
All right. When we come back, we've got the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. We'll follow that up with a radical rant. Who's going to FUBAR 2016? Ohio or California? Or maybe both? Stick around. We'll be right back.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belleville Show and 420 Radio. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belleville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Hey, you telling me marijuana's gonna mess up my concentration? I ain't gonna worry about that.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belleville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
And one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 and a half after the hour. And today for the rant, I want to do a compare and contrast on two states that are huge states population-wise, two states that are tipping point states when it comes to marijuana reform, and two states that are hugely vital in the 2016 presidential election. Those states would be California and Ohio. And my question today is, who will snafu 2016 worse? If you don't know, snafu is an acronym from World War II that means situation normal, all fouled up. And that's been a situation in California since 1996. California's been a snafu when it comes to legalization ever since medical marijuana passed. And to their credit, the activists in California passed a medical marijuana law that was so wide open that it is effectively a quasi sort of legalization in some places in the state. I won't pretend that it's perfect. Obviously, places in the Inland Empire, around Fresno, all sorts of places are Orange County, very conservative and have banned medical marijuana grows and all sorts of cultivation rules. I mean, Fresno doesn't let you grow a plant in any way whatsoever. So it's not perfect. But to a large extent, many people in California must feel like it's legal already. There are pot shops everywhere they go. People can possess marijuana. It's decrimmed up to an ounce, so you don't have that fear for being busted for low-level possession. So the situation in California is the fact that we've got so many groups that are fighting for legalization. So many that they had to put together a council, kind of a collaborative effort to try to get these groups together to decide how they want to move forward on one united front to end marijuana prohibition in 2016. And 2016 is the big year for legalization. It's the big presidential election year. Both parties are running primaries, right? Because, you know, they got a two-term president on the out. So there's somebody new is going to be in the Oval Office. Maybe not a new last name. It might be a Clinton or a Bush again, but still, at least we're having elections again. And California is going to be huge. They're not going to be able to deny the arguments about legalization or medical marijuana when they're fighting for California. So the problem in California is that you have all these groups, and it's a question of whether or not they can get all on the same page. And the big player in all this, the 800-pound gorilla, is the medical marijuana industry. And to some extent, the people that are already benefiting from medical marijuana, the patients, the people, the consumers that are already getting marijuana through storefronts. One problem is that among all the groups that are fighting for marijuana legalization, you have what I call true believers. That would be the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative, the so-called Jack Herer Initiative. Now, I've said this many times in the past, that if it were up to me, and I could put it on the ballot, and I could ensure that it passes, the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative is something that I would support. Absolutely. It allows people to grow a whole lot of plants, possess a whole lot of weed, keeps the taxes low, releases all the pot prisoners, and so forth. The problem, though, is that I don't get to wave a magic wand. And I don't get to ensure that a majority of the people are going to see things the way I see them. Now, the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative, the CCHI, have been fighting election cycle after election cycle after election cycle to try to get their language even on the ballot, even to collect enough signatures, and have never raised the money or had the professional staff to pull it off. It's just a fact. And that's not to be mean, and that's not to dismiss the activism of the people involved with it, who are very, very erstwhile and dedicated and altruistic about this. But there's a political naivete there. If you don't have the money, especially in a state like California, you're not going anywhere. So the question is, can all these other groups coalesce around one shared vision of what marijuana legalization can be? Can they bring the true believer CCHI people on board with it, or will they reject it as not being, quote, true legalization, and cause a schism within our community as we need to be united to move forward? Is California going to end up like it did in Prop 19 in 2010, finding the Northern California growers and the established medical marijuana businesses openly campaigning against legalization? Will the coalition in California have to move forward with a legalization plan that's amenable more to law enforcement and soccer moms, partially because they're going to lose part of their base no matter what they do? So it's an interesting situation that we're looking at in the state of California. Now, in the state of Ohio, kind of a similar situation, but a little different. Ohio is a big electoral state. It's the seventh largest state by population, so it's very important presidential election-wise. It's also a state that has decriminalization. In fact, the greatest amount of decriminalization in the United States, 100 grams, about 3.5 ounces, only gets you a ticket in the state of Ohio. Non-criminal infraction. So again, kind of like California, you have a situation where you don't have that card to play of people who are just simply possessing, going through all sorts of terrible life problems, because it's been decriminalized. But unlike California, we do not have a medical marijuana system. We don't have a medical marijuana system in Ohio to deal with. And so the big fight that's going on right now, the 800-pound gorilla in the room in Ohio, is this group, Responsible Ohio, the cartel grow monopolists that are proposing a constitutional cartel monopoly of 10 growers, the same 10 wealthy individuals who are funding the initiative. Folks, it's not an initiative. As John Pardee said on the show yesterday, it's not an initiative, it's a business plan. It has very little to do with rights. It has a lot to do with profits. Now, to be fair, if Responsible Ohio does make the ballot, it would at least legalize possession, and it would legalize pot stores, and any Ohioan could open a pot store, or a processing facility, or a testing facility. They just couldn't open a grow, and individual Ohioans wouldn't be able to grow their own either. Now, like California, in addition to the 800-pound gorilla in the room, there are other groups, multiple, that are working on various forms of reform in Ohio. You've got responsible Ohioans for cannabis, which would be the Ohio version of the Jack Herer Initiative. Again, well-meaning people, true believers, with a maximum amount of cannabis freedom spelled out in their amendment. But again, very little money and a little bit of political naivete in trying to reach so far for so much in a state that hasn't even passed medical yet. Then you've got John Pardee and the Ohio Rights Group, and then you've got, there's two other groups, and I don't remember their names off the top of my head. But again, like California, multiple groups, except a slight difference in Ohio is they're trying to decide, should we go for full legalization or go for medical or go for a CBD oil or something like that. It is incumbent on the reformers in Ohio, if they want to get something on the ballot and get it passed, and they don't want it to be responsible Ohio, then those four other groups must coalesce around a common plan. Any one of the four of them do not have enough mojo to pull this off. They do not have enough money, enough volunteers, enough public support by themselves. So if Ohio wants something other than responsible Ohio, I would call on all these members of all these other groups to have some sort of powwow and to decide how to move forward as a united front. And assuming they don't, or assuming they do and are unsuccessful, and assuming that responsible Ohio does get on the ballot, I know this is going to break some hearts, but folks, if it gets on the ballot, you need to support it. I know, a lot of people are like, what? It's got no home grow, Russ. It sets up a constitutional monopoly. Once it's legal, nobody will be able to home grow and we'll have to change our constitution in order to be able to home grow. It's terrible. And I agree. Do everything you can in the run-up to getting something on the ballot to stop this thing. Do everything you can to get some competing proposal on the ballot. Absolutely. But once that season is over, and if the only thing left standing is Responsible Ohio's initiative, then folks, got to hold your nose and vote for it. I mentioned this on the rant yesterday. Anything that ends cannabis contraband is worth supporting. Not having home grow is not enough of a deal breaker. Once you get your right to possess cannabis, and once we are no longer criminals, fighting for any other right becomes immensely easier. Immensely. Now, I know people say, well, Russ, they'll have this 10-grower cartel monopoly, and they're going to fight everything they can to prevent people from being able to do their own home grow or to be able to open up their own commercial grows. Yeah. Yeah, they will. You'll have to fight against 10 business interests. Won't that be easier than fighting against the entire law enforcement community, the entire state government, and every law written in the books? I think it will be. I don't like having to vote for things that don't have home grow. Hell, I didn't like having to vote for 502 that had the 5-nanogram per se DUI. But at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, what is this all about? What does legalization really mean? And to me, it means ending the punishment of people who use marijuana. Secondarily, ending the punishment of people who grow marijuana. But there are far more consumers than growers. And once those consumers are legal, their right to grow is undeniable. And we will see those laws change very quickly. But it's going to be a lot easier to pull that off as a legal consumer than a dope-smoking criminal. Much easier. Hey, folks, that's all the time we got for Hour 1, but stay tuned. Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio is coming up next. We'll talk more about the stories of the day. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. For everyone here at Rolla J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you